Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Quick reaction podcast to the Sam Darnold trade. So Sam Darnold traded from the Jets to the Carolina Panthers. The compensation in return is a 2021 sixth, a 2022 second, and a 2022 fourth for Sam Darnold. So that's not a ton. I guess, if you're trying to go thrift shopping, a discounted round two pick, basically, a time discounted round two pick, as well as a couple of day two picks, right? You could certainly pay more. It's not that much of a price. So I think on the positive side for Carolina, you could say, hey, listen, like, you keep addressing the position and just keep addressing the position and keep addressing the position until you get it right. And they did that with Bridgewater, and they've kind of realized with Bridgewater, like, hey, that's probably not the situation that is going to put us over the top, right? They've sort of seen that. The question is I don't know how this is better. I don't know how you can say that trading a second and two day three picks is an upgrade over Teddy Bridgewater for Sam Darnold. I mean, I guess that's in the range of outcomes. And I guess if we're being kind to Darnold, we could sort of go with this argument that, hey, this is a, this is a guy that's constantly been under, basically underserved for the Jets. The problem with that is this is the fourth year of his contract. He's played 3 years. He hasn't been good. And now you're sort of at a position where, all right, now you're on year four, and now you're going to need to pay him. And so, there's some discussion about, maybe them picking up his fifth year option. That hasn't really been set in stone yet. So I don't know. We'll see with that. What's fascinating to me is, like, when you look at Sam Darnold's career versus Bridgewater's career, I'm not a huge Teddy Bridgewater fan. And in terms of, I think he leaves a little bit to be desired in terms of ceiling. But when you compare the two of them, Teddy Bridgewater, 7.3 yards per attempt. Again, that's not blowing anyone away. Darnold, 6.6. AYA 6.9 for Teddy Bridgewater. For Darnold, 5.9. Touchdown rate, it's 3.4 for Bridgewater. It's 3.7 for Sam Darnold. Again, you're looking mid fours as being the number that is about the league average there. That's the baseline. I mean, I don't know. It's tough to see how this is an upgrade. So that's the thing that I would say about this whole thing is it's quizzical to me. If you look at this and you're saying, all right, like, he's got to essentially be an upgrade in the next 2 years, or, it's essentially a loss, and you're in the same position a couple years from now. That's really the rub for me is, I guess that's the question that I have. Now are you gonna commit to Darnold being the guy? Are you gonna commit to a two-year deal on him? They were in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes, with Watson, I think there's a reasonable chance that this thing blows over isn't the right word, but that this thing ends in the next 6 to 18 months. And that at that point you can find yourself back in those trade negotiations. I guess the positive for Carolina is that I don't think this has precluded that from happening. They're not paying such a ransom that, this isn't the Wentz deal or something like that. This isn't the Stafford deal. It's a lot cheaper. I guess that's a good thing. But when you look at this deal, I mean, There's $20 million dead cap for Bridgewater this year. They can save 2.9 cutting him. Next year, they can. It's a $5 million dead cap number with $21 million of savings. So, I mean, maybe they designate him a post-June 1 cut. Maybe they trade him. But still, even if they designate him post-June 1, it's still $15 million dead cap. You know, if they trade him, you know, if they trade him, they can save, you know, they can save a good chunk, especially if it's post-June 1. If they trade him, they can save a good chunk, you know, basically take $5 million cap hits over the next 2 years. I don't know. It's just, it's with the the problem with the Darnold thing is you're not getting, like, the reason why these rookie contracts are so valuable for quarterbacks is they're so depressed in price. This isn't the Sam Bradford era where they were all, you know, he's coming into the league making top 10 quarterback money. These guys are making, like, bottom of the barrel quarterback money. And so you take, you basically take that out of your range of outcomes. And now it's either he's going to be good and you have to pay him, or he's going to be bad and you got to start all over. I mean, you don't get the benefit of basically time. So that's really the thing with this. I get you keep firing bullets, and when they're not that expensive, I understand that. But this is the thing with Darnold. I think it's a little bit of a trap, because even if, right, I guess if he's good, you don't mind paying. But I don't know. It feels kind of like a trap, especially when he's probably not going to. I mean, I guess if they're shooting for like a top 10% outcome, right, that's a huge success, and then they don't mind paying him. But if it's anything like less than that, like if it's a middle, I don't know, if it's a middle two thirds of his range of outcomes, like how good are you going to feel in a year when you got to be like, all right, listen, we got to pay this guy $15+ million, as well as take a $10 million cap hit on Bridgewater. Like, I don't know. I didn't think that Carolina was a landing spot, because I didn't see how it fit their interests, unless they, you know, they see something in Darnold that is significantly wider range of outcomes than Bridgewater. And when you look at Darnold's career, I mean, there is 1,200 attempts so far in his career, and he's a 6.6 yards per attempt passer. I mean, that's essentially where you're at. That's a decent chunk of sample size to tell you what he's at. That is, you know, and we sort of use the metric of, you know, we use top 12 seasonal finishes, right? And what's the number? Basically, guys that don't hit essentially get about 50 starts. That's about, it's 50 and a quarter. He's at 38 and he's nowhere near hitting. So, like, already he's going to be past the grace period. So he needs to really break out. And I'm not sure at this arc, you know, people are constantly trying to forgive him, and I'll get to that in a second, you know, and get to some of the what I think are some pretty bad narratives that he didn't have support. I'll get to that in a second. But again, you just look back, he's bottom sixth, and he's sixth from the bottom in expected completion percentage this past year. I mean, there's just not, I don't know. I look at this and I'm pretty concerned ultimately about Darnold's profile. And I get that he's young. I sort of get that he can turn things around. There's not a ton of great precedent for this particular type of move. I guess if you were to look back like last year, so 2019, you know, he's just above expectations. So you could say, all right, that's a little bit better, right? But he's going in the wrong direction. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a sub 7 yards per attempt guy, and Bridgewater, who's not blowing anyone away, is well above him. So I don't know. We'll see how that all works. So I guess we'll get off the soapbox of the NFL side of this for a second and move to some of the fantasy stuff. One of the big things that I've seen in terms of narratives is basically this narrative that, oh, he didn't have anyone to throw to. And so I could somewhat agree with that. But where I think that analysis is flawed is when you sort of do the derivative, right? Which is, you take it a step out further And then you look at what those people did with other people, right? And you could sort of, it's essentially like kind of a strength of schedule type thing, or like an ELO rating, if you were to think of it in like in a different sense, which is like, all right, so here's the guys that you played. And all right, here's how they did against everybody else, right? And then you could say, all right, and then you lost to them by 50 or whatever, right? Like, okay, what's that say sort of against the other people? Well, so he has, in his career, has thrown, and thanks for Rotoviz for putting this thing together. This thing's awesome. It's an AYA app, so it's adjusted yards per attempt. And adjusted yards per attempt is yards plus touchdowns times 20 minus interceptions times 45 divided by attempts. Basically what that means is yards per attempt, and they're incorporating touchdowns as a positive in that, and they're incorporating interceptions as a negative in that. Basically, just over, you know, they're weighting interceptions just over 2-to-1 to interceptions. So a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio is actually going to be a negative in terms of the AYA adjustment, right? So you need to be better than that. And so when you look at this, that he's in his career, he's thrown to seven different receivers, seven different players that are, have 50 targets or more from Sam Darnold. And then there are, so there's one tight end, Chris Herndon, who's been the best player for Darnold in terms of adjusted yards per attempt at 8.66. Braxton Berrios at 8.26 is the second best. Robbie Anderson, 8.04. Jameson Crowder, 7.04. Quincy Enunwa, 5.31. Jermaine Kearse, 3.37. And you also have Le'Veon Bell in there as well. And I mentioned Chris Herndon. So I took a look at three of these guys because I just wanted to see, you know, hey, what's the, what are they, you know, what do they look like? And so you look at Darnold and Jameson Crowder. So Crowder has, in his career, played with a number of quarterbacks. And when you look at it, he's played with I used 20 attempts just so that way I could sort of get just a little bit broader picture. Again, some of the sample sizes is a little low, but I think you'll get the picture. Josh Johnson's the best at only 20 attempts. So that caveat aside there, 11.5 adjusted yards per attempt. Alex Smith, again, he was right at 20, 7.7. adjusted yards per attempt. Kirk Cousins, 7.53 adjusted yards per attempt. And this stat's going to kind of dock a guy like Crowder a little bit because he's more of like a slot guy. It's not a huge down the field threat. He's not scoring a ton of touchdowns. So these numbers are probably a little bit below what you would expect, but that's just kind of where he operates. Joe Flacco, 7.18 adjusted yards per attempt on 28 attempts. Sam Darnold, the worst at 7.04. So you say, okay, well, that's definitely a knock on him in terms of the Alex Smith, Kirk Cousins, Joe Flacco, Josh Johnson tree of the position. You look at a guy like Quincy Enunwa as well, and Enunwa has played with two guys that has had over 20 attempts and 20 targets here. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 7.55 adjusted yards per attempt, and Sam Darnold, 5.31. So again, you kind of get the idea on these things a little bit of like, hey, what's your deal? And okay, well maybe he hasn't played with the best. I could sort of concede that, right? This isn't the greatest show on turf Rams that we're talking about here. But when we sort of comp him to some other guys, like, there's problems. Okay, so Robbie Anderson. So here's one of the big things. Oh, he's going to a much better situation. Well, he's already played with Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson was on one of those teams that didn't have good weapons. How'd Robbie Anderson do with Sam Darnold? 8.04 attempted yards, adjusted yards per attempt. So that's a good number, right? That's one of the better performances there for Darnold amongst these guys. What are the other comps? Well, Bridgewater's 8.52. Josh McCown is 7.65. So Sam Darnold has a benefit on Josh McCown. That's good. And Bryce Petty is at 4.49. So he's noticeably ahead of Bryce Petty. But he's a half a yard behind Bridgewater. Does that sound familiar? Yes. That is their career difference. That is just about their career difference in terms of yards per attempt. It's actually, fortunately for Darnold, it is actually less than the adjusted yards per attempt difference. So I guess you could say that he actually performed better with Robbie Anderson compared to his career than Bridgewater did, I guess is the takeaway from that. But ultimately, I mean, that's really the problem that I have. It's like, yes, he didn't have a ton of great support, but the support that he had has always been better with other players, with other quarterbacks. And that's really the rub. That's the concern. You know, some of it, Adam Gase, maybe. But ultimately, I mean, I sort of look at the sum of the parts, right, and sort of break it down a little bit. Again, this isn't a perfect analysis, just for injury. And you know, maybe you don't take every single, you know, if it's one guy, you know, like Jordan Matthews, for example, is a guy that played with a bunch of quarterbacks, right? But he had varying stages of his career. Like, he was hurt. He was playing on one leg. Like, he did all these things. Like, it's you're not just cherry picking and saying, oh, look, he was terrible with, you know, I don't even, you know, EJ Manuel or someone like that. No, I think he was in Buffalo after EJ Manuel, maybe Josh Allen. You have a bigger sample of these guys. And that's really the thing that concerns me about Darnold, is when you look at some of this stuff, it's not that promising. So that's ultimately, I think, the feeling that I get on him. Again, could he turn it around? Yes. He's getting like turbocharged guys with, you know, with DJ Moore, who's going to help him. You know, he's going to get Robbie Anderson and probably bring Robbie Anderson back to earth a little bit. He's got Christian McCaffrey. So those things, you know, those things will help, but again, it's a lot. They really need to help. This is a player to this point that has been not a truck, but a trailer with, you know, multiple flat tires and like a wobbly axle. That's kind of what he's been. And so if we're going to, you know, expect him to make this huge leap, he really needs to take that thing into the shop and get it turned around, and it better be a damn good mechanic. You know, and like the tires better be outstanding, and you know, he's got to get an upgrade in the vehicle towing the trailer, right? I mean, that's kind of where we're at. You know, so I'm skeptical, I guess is the easiest way to say it. I do think this is really interesting, because they've talked about, we need a franchise quarterback. They didn't pay franchise quarterback prices for him. And you know, maybe Deshaun Watson's out of their, you know, they're out of business on him now. I wonder if things change, if that could be revisited. I kind of wonder if, you know, something changes with him and he becomes, where he becomes available, Watson becomes available, if it doesn't make Denver a more likely suitor, something like that. But basically at this point, you're kind of reducing the amount of places that Watson could land. I guess you could still land with the Jets, and this opens that up. This essentially assures for the Jets, this essentially assures they're going to go quarterback. You know, Zach Wilson's been the guy that's commonly mocked there. I'm not sure that's a guarantee yet. And if you remember, like this time a few years ago, Sam Darnold was the lock consensus 101 to Cleveland, and that didn't happen. Fortunately, and that was very nice. You know, it was good to be on the opposite side of that bet, is what I'll say. So that's really the deal, right? And I think this stems from, you know, we talked about the San Francisco thing. I mean, and that how it hurt Darnold. This actually does land on his feet, and I didn't think this was going to be a place where he was going to land. So, and I said that. I said as much. I didn't think that they were going to be in on him. So call me. I'll take an L on that one for sure. You know, when you look at the rest of the tracking matrix, so this is definitely going to open up. So we go back and we look at the quarterback stuff. You're going to have a new quarterback with the Jets. You're going to have a new quarterback with Carolina. So this just increases the amount of teams that are going to have new quarterback situations. And by my count right now, it is up to locking in the Jets, by definition, they will have a new one. You lock in. So by my count, that is 9 teams so far that have new quarterbacks. That does not include Jacksonville. It does not include Houston, nor Denver. Yeah, so that's where we're at. It doesn't include San Francisco either with Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's pretty much the list right there. So I'm at 9 right now by my count. Again, I think Minshew will be there. Maybe it's Tyrod Taylor with Houston. But I think you're under that, 19 or 18 and a half or whatever Schefter said earlier in the offseason. Look in here in terms of what do we think on the – on the cost spectrum for Sam Darnold, I will say, right, if you're the question that I always ask myself and I sort of pride myself on asking is, what if I'm wrong? And what does that look like? Well, again, he has Robbie Anderson. I think he has a better coaching staff. He's got a really good offensive coordinator. He's got DJ Moore, who I think's on a remarkably efficient track to start his career. He's got Christian McCaffrey, and you have a franchise that just paid him. It's a clean start. He's out of New York. He's out of the media market. All of those things could be huge benefits to him. And, I have had in my career situations where I needed to reset the clock. I worked in a toxic place for 7.5 years. And I left there, and I could have went and raked leaves. Like, honestly, that would have been like a huge win, just because I'm a landscaping nut. But I could have gone and done almost anything else, and it would have been a reset for my psyche, and it would have been a positive for my job prospects going forward. Almost. I could have been a barista at Starbucks, not used any of my prior experience, and it probably would have been a positive reset on my career track, at least, mentally and emotionally. So I don't discount that with a guy like Darnold, right? I don't discount that dysfunction. So let's look and see sort of here where we're at. We actually have trades from today in the Analytics of Dynasty Trade Finder. So that's, that's pretty nice. So we'll see. I am not sure. I don't have the one thing I don't have in here is times on when these trades are made. But I know, for example, that the one made on April 5th, which is when I'm actually when I'm recording this, I'm pretty sure that one was made after the trade. So Sam Darnold and Cortland Sutton for Mike Evans and 212. I think Sutton and Evans might be closer together, and that's probably like a mid-second round valuation, probably no matter the way you cut it. It looks like a two-copy league. He went for a late second, and Sam Darnold for Derek Carr. A couple days ago, it was Sam Darnold, DJ Shark, Preston Williams, and 108 for Deshaun Watson. I mean, that's how you win Dynasty, right? That's the high-variance play. That's how you do it. Someone paid earlier this week, they paid Darnold and 112 for Tua and 208. I would do that. I would smash that. I'm not a huge Tua guy, but you're resetting the clock and you're getting more flexibility. So I love that. Him for Deebo Samuel. So we'll see here on his valuation where that works towards. I think If they're having a true open competition, I wouldn't rule out the fact that Bridgewater's a 2021 starter. I don't think that they think that, but I do think that, I do think that like that. I would not rule Teddy Bridgewater out of a competition. Would be my take. Darnold's going 9-12 in startup drafts. It's quarterback 23.5 in terms of his median. Again, that's going ahead of Jameis Winston. I'll smash Winston there. It's going, and then it's a tier, right? So then you sort of get in that range, and it's like, all right, well, what are you sort of valuing? For me, it's Jameis over Darnold, just from a ceiling perspective. And then you get Garoppolo's in that. Again, that's pre-trade. There's a lot of this data is pre-trade. Drew Locke's in there, Cam, Ben, Bridgewater. All right, so I guess if you're trying to take an upside, you know, variance bet, I guess that's the one to take. Again, I wonder if the ceiling isn't something in like the mid quarterback two range, right? Looks a lot like Bridgewater. You know, that would sort of be my thought on it. I think this makes the landing spot for the quarterback in for the Jets much more interesting because this essentially locks them into being the starter and to start the year. So we'll see there how that all goes. You know, as I said, I think that if you're looking at teams that need a quarterback, you know, just walk down the draft order here for a second. So you've got Jacksonville at one. That's Urban Meyer all but tattooed it on his forehead the other day that they were taking Trevor Lawrence. You know, the Jets are going to take a quarterback now, assuming that there's no Watson trade out there. Watson or Miami was at three. Now they traded back to San Francisco. So San Francisco is at three, and that's going to be a quarterback. And again, I think the show starts at four. And I was asked this in the GroupMe chat. I don't have a good feeling on this. And I will tell you, as I sit here in the first week of April, I'm going to spend a portion of at least every other day, if not every day, looking at the news out of Atlanta. You know, reading The Athletic, reading some of the other spots that cover Atlanta, because I am fascinated about what they're going to do. So I think that's where the draft starts. Cincinnati at five. Again, that could be a landing spot. Then I sort of look down here, and there's things that I think, right, like could Miami, again, the trade down by Miami signaled that they're not, that they're comfortable with Tua. The question is if their quarterback three in this class is sitting there at six, like, man, you almost have to do that, right? I don't know. That's tough not to do that. You know, if their quarterback two is sitting there, right? If they're, you know, if they evaluated Fields, they're like, yeah, we like Fields, but you know, we're just not going to be there. We could trade down or whatever. Like, it's not a priority for us. And you're sitting there on the clock, and you're like, man, like we're staring at our quarterback two, and you know, are we in love with Tua? Like, I don't think that's an unreasonable chance now. And as I sort of look and reevaluate this, because Carolina's not going to come up for the pick. You know, Detroit at seven. Does this open a window to them? Does this open a window for someone further down the line? You know, you look at eight, so that's Carolina. Denver's nine, right? That's the one and blaring green lights for me that is like, hey, that's a potential trade-up team. Dallas at 10, no, they're set. The Giants seem unlikely at 11. Just not what they do. Again, Philadelphia is at 12. And what would be fascinating is if one of the quarterbacks started to slide, and do they come up, right? I know that they've said that they're at Hurts, but this introduces uncertainty. And if Atlanta doesn't take a quarterback there, it could be a free-for-all. Right, it could really open up a lot of different things. So it'll be really, really interesting. I think there's other things that you could see. It wouldn't shock me if Minnesota took a quarterback. I think it's unlikely. That wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me if the Patriots moved up. Heck, it wouldn't shock me if Vegas moved up. Right, again, and so now you're sort of saying, whereas I thought maybe eight was like a kind of a drop dead point for quarterback five. If they're going to take Darnold and sort of not be in on that, that opens up, I think it opens up a floor, a hole in the floor of what we would have seen. So is Washington, is it more accessible now for Washington? And again, once you sort of get to that point, like maybe there's less buyers, right? If people are sort of spooked on Justin Fields or something like that, you know, maybe there's less buyers as you sort of get into that range. So I do think this opens up uncertainty, because one of the things that we were sort of banking on was that a quarterback's probably not getting by Carolina. And so if you got three in the top three and then four is no later than Carolina, you know, is it Atlanta? Is it Denver? Right? There was a much narrower range of players. Now there's a seawall there that's opened up, and you could say, hey, listen, like, you could see, I'm not going to say an Aaron Rodgers fall, but you could see a scenario where 72 hours ago, the media was speculating that, hey, this could be this could be five quarterbacks in a row. I think that's less likely now, just because Carolina's not going to be in that dance. So, you know, maybe it still is. Maybe Atlanta does it. But if Atlanta calls anything other than quarterback, it's going to be a, like, get your popcorn ready, because things could go wild. Things could go really wild, especially if Mac Jones is the pick at three. Like, that would be really where things, because then you've presumably got Fields and Lance out there, and, you know, is there smoke to this? Is there actual fire to this smoke about Justin Fields and some of the stuff that's going on with him? I think it's really, really interesting. These trades have implications. I could keep running down the draft board, but that's it. I mean, you know, is Chicago in business, right? You just keep sort of looking down the line, like, are these teams that could potentially be on the move? Is Pittsburgh a team that could potentially get up into the top 10, right? You sort of look at the deal that, and then you can sort of, because once you get to that 8-10 range, and you can say, all right, we've got comps for that, right? We've got comps for playoff teams going up and getting a quarterback, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, right? That's the pick this year and a future first, right? And then all of a sudden, right, that's more accessible. Whereas if you had to get to six, or five, it's a lot more, right? So that's the thing. I think this could absolutely open it up, especially if Atlanta passes. So Atlanta's going to be, in terms of how the draft unfolds, Atlanta is going to be the key one. San Francisco and the Jets, who they take is going to be fascinating and interesting in their own right. But the thing that could make things go totally off the rails is a situation like Atlanta. What's even more interesting is, again, I'm willing to cede the fact that Miami is playing like 15th dimensional chess, just because I think that they're pretty savvy. I wonder if they made their trade up, if they're like, you know, like, I don't know, that 106, like, that could be a potential trade down again. Like, we can extract more from that. Like, we could go from 106 to, you know, 20 and get two more future firsts. And it's like, he's kind of where they're running laps around Howie Roseman. I don't think that was what they were thinking, but you could see that scenario play out again, for sure. So that's all that. Well, again, I could keep doing this on this trade, because I just think it's this board is fascinating where it's at. But I'll cut it here. You know, there'll be more to come. Rookie profiles coming out this week. You know, I do think I would peruse. So let me just put a fine point on Darnold for a second. I think if you want to pay like a later super flex second, or you don't have a need and you're like, all right, like, we can do a reclamation project, I don't think it's the worst idea. You know, if you could pay a couple of thirds plus, right, can you do that in a way that you don't have to give up a running back we're going to like in the second round, right? Where you sort of pay that value, but maybe you do it with like a player and a third or a couple thirds or something like that. That would sort of be the deal. You know, can you work in an arbitrage, right? Is it a small, I'm just thinking of ideas, because is it a small downgrade at tight end? Are you trading within a tier at tight end, for example? Are you moving from, I don't know, someone likes, you know, it's Fanton Hawkinson, and you could sort of like trade that arbitrage and take Darnold, right? Like, that's the stuff that I would love to do, like, in terms of how to sort of acquire him, how to go about it. I just hate giving up picks, especially for, I hate locking myself into illiquidity at this point, because that is my greatest strength in Dynasty is trading in rookie drafts and being really flexible and being able to move around the board and sort of having convictions and confidence in doing that. That's my that's what I do best. That is absolutely where I feel the most comfortable. And if I sort of lock myself to Darnold right now, I just know that I can't do that. And so, but if you are looking to do, you know, some thrift shop stuff, you know, I have a spot where we could use a quarterback in a two quarterback league, right? If we could sort of patch together that later second round type valuation and take a shot, like, I don't have a problem doing that again, but try and figure out a way to do it with something other than picks. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Till next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.